Ponce v. Mao.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Andy McGowan.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. You know, the same.
Anyway, Mr. Mount appeals the district court's denial of the government's motion for the third point off for acceptance of responsibility. Third point off for acceptance is based on the government's evaluation of whether it had to prepare for trial or not. In this case, the government did not have to prepare for trial, and it made the motion. The government told the court as much, both in the plea agreement and when the court asked the government for a basis for the motion, the government said, well, in addition to the actual trial, we may have had two trials in this case, so by pleading guilty, he actually avoided two trials.
How do you distinguish Williamson, that Fifth Circuit case that concludes that a district court can deny a 3E1.1B adjustment despite a government motion for the adjustment?
I would say that's a difference in the approach that the circuits have taken.
So I had a similar question, which is simply whether, in light of the dearth of law on this precise question, we would actually have to create a conflict in the circuits, namely with the Fifth Circuit, if we were to adopt your position.
Well, in some ways, I think that conflict already exists, based on the other circuits' reading of DeBerry. DeBerry is very strong, and I understand that in that case the government didn't make the motion.
Which could be a big difference. I mean, I was interested. Can you think of any other examples in the guidelines where the guideline computation automatically, you know, flows from a government motion?
No.
Because, I mean, I know that 3550, I know this is not a 3553. All this is about is what guideline computation do you start out with before you then proceed to the next phase of sentencing. That I'm fine with. But I can certainly understand the district court's impression that when the government makes a motion, it sounds like when you talk about making a motion, it might be granted or it might be denied.
I understand. I had the same reaction when I saw this because I hadn't seen too many cases where the judge denied the motion for the third point. In fact, this was the first time. And I looked at it and said, well, it's a motion. But on the other hand, the way the guideline, this particular guideline reads and the basis for it, it really is all up to the government for a number of reasons, one of which is the guideline says it. But the other thing is the government is in the best position to determine whether the government had to prepare for trial or not. This really is focused on whether the government had to prepare for trial.
So I understand that, but here's a different way of coming at this. Suppose we were to agree with you that this was actually a mistake in the interpretation of the guideline, 3E1.1, but it was actually really, when you read the district court's explanation, you can see that she thinks Mr. Mound is entitled to, or she's willing to give him some kind of adjustment for acceptance, but she doesn't want to give him full adjustment. So she would have done this, it seems to me, inevitably, if she had correctly taken that third level off, she would have added it back in again in 3553A. This guy walks. I mean, he's on the lam for a while, and he's not the world's best candidate for acceptance of responsibility.
Well,
it's a harmless error question.
Yes,
for you
I understand. I understand that that's a way to look at this to some extent. However, I don't think that the court's statements go far enough to be able to say that the court would have imposed the same sentence. In fact, the court goes at some length when, in response to, I believe it's Mr. Mount's aunt, speaks after the court announces the sentence, and the court listens to his aunt. And her argument was that, well, he hasn't had a love, and if he had a child, it would be all different. And the district court's response was, well, no, not necessarily. We've seen too many kids that don't have parents that are there, and said, I think that the sentence is fair, but even in that context, the court is thinking that the sentence is fair because it's a within-guideline sentence. The court specifically said, when she was imposing sentence, that I think a within-guideline sentence is appropriate in this case.
Isn't this one that still would have been at a slightly different point in the range? I hope I'm not getting these cases confused. But.
Right. In this case, the range was 92 to 115 months when the court imposed the sentence, and the court sentence was 100 months.
Right.
So it was sort of at the a third high of the bottom end of the guideline range.
And what would the range have been if this third point?
84 to 105.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. So the 100
months. Oh, certainly
it
would have been within the guideline range.
Within either range.
But it was at the. It would have been
I realize
very
the
high
relative
end.
Point would
sure.
have shifted. Yeah.
And when you take this court's precedent in whether something's harmless or not, I don't believe that the facts amount to this court being able to say, well, the court would have imposed the same sentence, which is really the standard that this court has used. The other thing is that the government really hasn't raised that. That question whether it's harmless error. I understand that this court can consider that anyway, but about the DeBerry case, too, which is the conflict in the circuits, that kind of question. When I looked at the DeBerry case, we've got a situation where the defendant was appealing the government's failure to make the motion, and this court said, well, the government didn't have to make the motion, even though the only reason the government didn't make it was because the defendant did not appeal, waive his right to appeal. And I think it's very closely tied to the actual ruling in that sense, because what it's telling district courts is, if you do not give this motion for a downward departure, even in this situation where the basis was that he didn't waive his right to appeal, it would be incorrect. Now, in that case, if he had waived his right to appeal and the district court had not granted it, he would have not been able to appeal it. And in many ways, Mr. Mount stands in Mr. DeBerry, or the defendant in DeBerry's position here. He negotiated with the government. He got the government to admit that it would make the third point off. The government made the third point off. And he expected one of the few things in the guideline that he can expect is the court to give that third point off.
So
the motion's made.
What I hear you arguing, I think, is that DeBerry, while not dispositive, is very helpful to you.
It is.
Okay. Thank you. You're in your rebuttal, but...
Well, thank you. Yeah. Just trying to see if there's anything else I need to
sure.
say here. Let's you know, I think I've said pretty much what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
If I may reserve the rest of my time.
Thank
you.
Okay. Hi, Ms. Hale. How are you? All my regulars are here.
Thank you and good morning. My name is Gail Hellert, and I represent the government in this case, and I have had the Jamie Mount case since the beginning. Undoubtedly, this case is simply different factually than either the defense's main case of DeBerry or the government's main case of Anderson. The main difference being that in both DeBerry and Anderson, the government did not make the motion for the third level, and here the government did make the motion for the third level.
But
so the
see, what I'm looking at is the actual language of 3E1.1, which does yes. seem like a fairly good starting point if all of these other things are slightly off point. And subpart A obviously calls for a finding of fact, whether there's a clear demonstration of acceptance of responsibility. So you can see where the district court's role is in
yes.
subpart A. Subpart B begins with if the defendant qualifies for a decrease under A. So you've got the A finding out of the way, and the rest of it is quite mechanical. The offense level has to be 16 or greater. There's got to be a government motion. Then it just says decrease the offense level by one additional level. It doesn't say, and if the court finds X or Y. There are ministerial things that are outlined. It's either 16 or greater, or it's a 10. So you're not there. The government either makes a motion or it doesn't make a motion. And we have steadfastly supported the government's discretion to make a motion or not. But the government did make a motion in this case. I can imagine the government might not have wanted to. You might have said, hey, this guy, you know, skipped out for years. You know, we don't think he lived up to the bargain. We're not, and that, therefore, we're relieved of this responsibility. But that's not the choice you made. There was a motion. And it just looks to me like it's a little oddly configured, but the discretion is in A, and then B follows from those two extra factors.
Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is, how do you get around the mandatory language?
Right.
Well, the government does not think this is mandatory language because part of the language here is permitting the government and the court to allocate their resources efficiently.
But that's just a qualification of the motion. The government has to make the motion. No one, you have never supported the proposition that the court, sua sponte, can give the third level.
Correct. Correct.
I think that's actually fatal to the argument you just made.
Well, but the point is that the court took into account the resources that were used by the Marshal Service to go get Mr. Mount, and that was part of the reason for the 100-month sentence determination.
But you cited no case to us where the government did make a motion and the court overruled that motion.
We could not find any Seventh Circuit precedent where our factual case occurred before.
Right, or any other circuit.
True.
And I think that's because the language is mandatory.
Well, I think the situation just doesn't come up very much.
Right, because
most
it's mandatory.
Here you are today, poor soul.
Yes, but most of the time, that third level probably will get granted and probably does get granted. However, Anderson...
But surely there would have been an appeal if there had... I mean, this is big stuff for defendants. They want to start out with an advisory guideline range that's as low as possible. That paves the way for the rest of the 3553A arguments.
But from the perspective of judges, too, certainly judges, and this is a 11E1B plea agreement, where the parties agree on certain things, but the court has more discretion than under a C agreement.
Of course.
Yes.
But the court can exercise discretion galore under 3553A. I am sure that if... In fact, that's why I asked the harmless error question. I won't say I'm sure, but I think it certainly quite possible that Judge Magnus Stinson, if she had correctly calculated the guidelines and given the third level off, might then have said, but your particular characteristics, Mr. Mount, suggest to me that with this guideline range, I want to go a little bit higher within the range and give you a 100-month sentence. Seems to me quite possible she might have done that. And that's where her discretion is lodged, not, as Gall says, in the correct computation of the guidelines.
With respect to the court's question about what language might have come from this circuit, we think that the closest, certainly not a factual case, but the closest about the court having discretion is Anderson, that the government cited, because in that case, the defendant complained about the breach of the plea agreement because the government just didn't do the third level,
Anderson, all we really decided in Anderson was that the government's breach of the plea agreement didn't arise to plain error because the sentencing court there, the court's statements in pronouncing the sentence made it clear that the 10-year term, the statutory maximum, would have been imposed with or without a third point for acceptance of responsibility.
And while that's true, but importantly, too, in Anderson, this court's language was looking at, yes, there was a breach of the plea agreement, but this court noted that the additional one-level reduction was inapplicable on its face and said it was confident that the judge would have exercised his discretion to avoid awarding the defendant the benefits of the third level under 3E1.1B. So this court did talk about the court's discretion under the awarding those two plus the third level. That's the closest that the government found in this circuit because we didn't find anything that was applicable on its face. We didn't argue harmless error because our position is there was no error, because our position is that Judge Stinson just gets to do this. She gets to deny the government's motion.
But this would be the first case in the United States to say that. Because nobody was briefing this in Anderson. Nobody was...
It's true.
Focusing on this point. So this is a significant step you're asking us to take.
Or not, because the guidelines right now are not mandatory. And so to say that the court gets the discretion to deny that motion versus the court has to grant that third level would put that aspect of the guidelines as mandatory.
No, it doesn't at all. It means, as the court has said in Gall, I know you made that argument in your brief, but it's just wrong. As the court said in Gall, step one is to calculate the guideline range just as scrupulously as you would have done it the day before Booker was decided, because that's the point of reference that the court wants for the court's, for the district court's then exercise of its discretion, taking all of the circumstances identified in 3553A into account. There's absolutely nothing that says you don't have to calculate guidelines correctly, and that's all we're talking about.
Right, and we think that, no, we don't promote the idea that Judge Stinson just can play loose and fast with the guidelines.
That's
we
right.
Think
so
she
if a
did
guideline says,
them.
You know, it's going to be level, you know, 20 if so much quantity is involved, you don't get to say, well, I actually don't think level 20 is a good level
right.
for this much quantity. I'm going to put some other level. That doesn't make the guidelines mandatory. It just means that there are criteria that need to be observed.
The court's point during Mr. McGowan's argument is another point that the government would make to this issue, though, which is to say that the court must or shall grant this third level under the guidelines seems
in
strange.
In computing the guidelines.
Right, but that seems strange that the government, that the court must grant any government's motion, because the court isn't required to grant any government motion except for maybe a motion to dismiss.
But doesn't this feed into the unusual character of this? In other words, the government has to be willing to stand up and say, we're satisfied with the cooperation, et cetera, this person has demonstrated. The court has no way of reading the government's mind. So unless the government mm-hmm. puts that information on the record, the third level isn't available. But if the government's willing to put that on the record, then the third level happens. That's how the guidelines seem
by
to
a motion. Sure, by a
well,
motion.
That's what I'm saying. Puts
yes.
it on the record. We're calling it a motion.
Yes.
You know, write a letter. So, I mean, whatever. Motion is probably the best word for it. But
we just, our position is there's nothing that says the court has to grant such a motion. And the court, this court knows that district courts can deny government's motions of all different kinds, and we cited three areas which were areas cited by DeBerry, Hayes, Schaefer, and Blue. They were 5K motions, but they were also government motions. Information that the government would have known about a defendant to say, court, we think this person should get some benefits, just like a 3E motion, and the court didn't grant it, and this court upheld those decisions. So the we didn't argue harmless error because we didn't think there was error at all. However, and if I might finish just this last thought, assuming arguendo that this court does think that there's error, we do think it was harmless.
I'm just going to point out the 5K1.1 says, upon motion of the government, et cetera, comma, the court may, that's the word that's used, depart
yes.
from the guidelines. So the wording
so
is significantly different.
Yeah, it specifically says it. And in, it's not part of the guideline, but in the application notes, the application notes the adjustment under B may only be granted upon formal motion by the government, which understandably in context means it comes from us, not the court, but there's the word may again within 3E1.1B.
Thanks so very much.
Thank you.
Mr. McGowan, do you want to take any time? No question here. Case will be taken under advisement.